The following was recorded in front of a live studio audience at the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe. This is the United Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Quirky Dog Podcast, inspired by some of the quirkiest dogs you can ever imagine and the owners who love them. This podcast is brought to you by the quirky couple themselves, Scott and Jess Williams. Their aim is to educate and entertain. Here's Scott and Jess.
Put it on his pads.
Hey, guys. Welcome. All right. Today, we are going to talk about how to pick a dog trainer. There's a lot of dog trainers out there, and we want to help guide your decision-making process. But first, we're going to start with the quirky tip of the day.
Quirky? That's my part now.
Oh, you're going to tell him the tip? He was about to put this right on the pig.
Since we got the cold weather coming, we got our dogs out there in the snow and the ice. What we like to use is Musher's Secret. You put a little bit of this stuff on their pad, and it just acts as a barrier, right like that, right on the pig's pad. And it just protects them, and it's a good thing to keep them from getting cracked pads and all that kind of stuff. And as the name implies, Musher's Secret, this is stuff I guess they were using up in the Iditarod originally, but it is a good product, something to think about.
Yeah, and a lot of the local pet stores will sell it, which is fine, but I would price check it with Amazon too, because especially if you have a dog with big paws, you go through it pretty quickly. But it does help them a lot throughout the winter. So, how would you recommend we pick a dog trainer?
What the hell are we doing today?
Doing dog trainers.
How to pick a dog trainer. Good question. Boy, a bunch of charlatans out there.
You know, there are a lot of options these days.
If they know what they're doing, you can't find them.
Yeah, that is true.
They don't know how to use the internet. They don't like to talk to people.
Yeah, that's true.
But they're great dog trainers.
Yeah, dog training is definitely an experience-related industry, it seems. And that is true. A lot of dog trainers are more introverted. And the ones that have the most experience and everything else, you may hear of more word of mouth than even through the internet or whatever else. But the first thing we would say this day and age is to check the reviews. Now, there's so many different ways to cross-check what people are saying on their websites about themselves through Yelp and Angie's List and Facebook reviews and Google reviews and everything else. So really, give a gander to those. And yeah.
If people are not happy, they love to let everybody else know.
That's true.
Whether it's through Yelp or all that kind of
stuff.
That's true.
Yeah. We luckily really had a lot of nice reviews. We didn't have a big issue. But
well, when people didn't like us, we used to just take them out back and beat them half to death.
Scott.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, but really, for the most part, you really want to, even if the grade you don't think is great, go through and read what people are saying. Because some people are just a little bit,
naughty.
What do you want to say? Yeah, exactly. They're going to go on some rant about, you know, oh, I didn't like that he showed up and he wasn't wearing, you know, logo clothing or his truck ran, you know, whatever. And it doesn't really have to do with the dog training. So go through and read the reviews, but do your research, because there's a lot out there now. There's a lot of different people claiming that they're dog trainers. A lot of them are charging a lot of money. And ultimately, you want to be happy.
Yeah. I mean, I just remembered a bad review that we got once. I mean, and we could count them on one hand. But it was interesting because you talk about reading the negative review. This woman said, Jess and Scott were great. They did a great job with the dog. But he used foul language. And she didn't like that. Remember?
Yeah.
And I was like, holy smokes. I responded to her and said, geez, I'm sorry about that. I hadn't even thought about it. Because I get kind of loose with my talking. And not everyone appreciates that stuff.
Yeah, but it had nothing to do with the dog training. And Scott was especially surprised in New England. He thought that was a warming characteristic.
Yeah, usually people
are
swearing at me.
In New England. So, but no, you want to be thoughtful of those things. And you want to kind of just see if you can make the right fit before you even go out and introduce yourself to people. And then the other thing that's really worked well is posting in local Facebook groups. So if your city has like a, you know, group, like we had Amesbury Talks when we were living in Massachusetts, go on there and say, hey, does anyone have any dog trainers nearby that you like or that have worked well? It happens a lot of times with veterinary clinics too. And people always chime in because they had a bad story and a good story. And of course, everyone's going to have their own opinions. But sometimes there's an overwhelming response. Go see this person. Or sometimes people say the best place to go is at least 15 miles away. So
and also they'll say stay away from this one or that one too.
Yeah, and it's real-time feedback because normally dog training is a pretty local industry. So you're finding someone that's, you know, within an hour of you. So people that are nearby will likely have used these people or heard of things or something else also.
Yeah, yeah. And then I guess that could move on to credentials and things like that, training. It's an unregulated industry. You know, anybody can put a sign out and say, hey, I'm a dog trainer in any state, and they wouldn't be breaking any laws. So that being said, you know, you want to do your due diligence and try and find out more about them. And sometimes the more credentials they have, the less experience they really have. They're just kind of, you know, I mean, you can get all kinds of, you can join associations and you can put their logos on your website and all that stuff. It doesn't necessarily mean that they are good dog trainers just because they're part of 15 different associations.
Yeah, you know? It's not like you're bringing your dog to the vet. Obviously, you want to see DVM after that person's name if they're going to be medically treating your dog. But with dog training, really, it's based on experience more than anything. The more that you get some hands-on experience in the field, the more qualified you are. And Scott and I are lucky, and Scott especially, you know, you just thousands of dogs over the years, you just are handling thousands of dogs, training thousands of dogs, you're learning more and more and more. And really, the more that you learn, the less that you realize that you know, honestly. I mean, if you're not humble as a dog trainer, and if you don't recognize that you may see a case that you never saw before, then you don't have the experience that you probably need to be qualified to be, you know, taking money from people.
Not to interrupt you, it is similar to other trades in the sense that, like, I had my real estate license like 20 years ago, and it was a lot of work to get that license. I had to take a state exam, and, you know, there was the practical and the legal side of all that. And then when I got to the real estate office, they said, forget all that crap. Now you're going to go out and learn in the real world about how to deal with this stuff. And it's similar with dog training. I mean, you need to know the basics of how dogs learn, and you need to work with dogs and certainly be competent. You know, when you start, you need to be able to train a dog for sure. But there's nothing really that can prepare you unless you shadowed someone else for several years. That would be one way of doing it. But aside from that, I mean, you're going to see so many different breeds and temperament types. And even, you know, 15 years into it, dogs would walk in the door and situations would come in that I hadn't seen before. It's like, you know, you think you've seen everything and there's always something new that comes up, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of these schools, if you will, granted, they're a lot of money. And a lot of times the dogs are kind of pre-trained to do well for the students, if that makes sense. So it's different when it's an organic situation where it's someone's dog with problems and you. So don't necessarily get too wrapped up in credentials and schools and everything else. It's more about kind of just your general feel and rapport that you get with the person.
Oh, and speaking of schools, that makes me think of electronic collar training. There's a lot of trainers out there that just do electronic collar. And I don't have a problem with electronic collar training. In fact, I've done tons of it over the years, but it wasn't the foundation of how I learned to train a dog. And if someone, some of these schools, or not schools, but dog trainers, that's all they do. And if you don't like, if you're not comfortable with electronic collar training, then that's not going to be the dog trainer for you, because that's kind of all they do, you know, and that's, it's limited. They're kind of a specialist in electronic collar. So if you're not comfortable with that tool, as an example, that's not the one to go to. And vice versa, if you have someone that is only a clicker trainer, if you don't want to do clicker training, that's not your dog trainer. You know, and it's nice if you have a well-rounded dog trainer that's familiar with several different methodologies, you know, that can help fit your personality and your dog's temperament. Because not all dogs are great with an electric collar either, you know, and not all dogs are great working with a clicker.
And a lot of dogs, if they leave their home environment, they're not going to eat food because they're too stressed to be away from home. And some dogs, even in their home environment, are overfed, stressed when strangers are there, they're not going to eat. So I would be open to methodologies. Don't come in close-minded, listen to the dog trainer and everything else. But with that said, don't allow someone to talk into something that you're not comfortable with. And also on that front, don't be working with someone that necessarily pressures you to sign a contract on the spot. It's a little bit concerning to have that type of approach with dog training because it's a big decision. It's you and your dog, and there's a lot of intricacies of your relationship that come out and your family dynamic and everything else. So if you're feeling like, oh my gosh, I have to make a decision and I'm under the gun, maybe that might not be the right fit for you. And also, Scott had brought this up this morning, and it's a good point. Don't wait to get dog training until you have to do something. Don't wait until there is a bite incident or, you know, there is an issue with you and your spouse because of the dog's behavior, and now you really are under the gun to make something happen. Try to do some proactive dog training throughout the dog's life.
Yeah, and even if, say you were going to go on vacation in a month or two from now, so you want to do a board and train program, as an example, which a lot of people came to me with that scenario. They said, hey, we're going away in July. Rather than just board the dog, we'd like to do some training. So we want to do the board and train. But they were coming to me like 2 weeks before the trip. And they were kind of under the gun now to find someone where they could actually get the dog in for that date. So if you would like to do something like that with your dog 6 months from now, you know you're going to go away for the holidays or something like that. Find a dog trainer that does that kind of stuff now. Get to know them. Do some classes. Build some relationship with people. And then you'll know, hey, it may or may not, that relationship may or may not have worked out. But at least you won't go into a situation where you don't know the person. You drop off your dog there. You're kind of stressed the whole time you're out of town. Doesn't mean anything negative is going to go on. But you just have a lot of unanswered questions. You start thinking about your dog too much and getting all stressed out, you know?
Yeah, and that brings up, and I didn't really even think of this because I just assume that people are going to be meeting with the person that's going to be training their dog before they are training their dog. But if it's just a website with numbers or just a phone call to sell you or something else, make sure you're seeing the person in the flesh before there's an exchange of money and everything else. You want to see, I always say, like, see how the person works with their dog. If their dog is there, not necessarily doing a demo, but do they have control of their dog? Can they get their dog out with, you know, the comfort that you want to get your dog out with? Do you like the way their dog works? Does their dog look, you know, happy and animated and well-behaved? And, you know, do they seem like they have a good relationship? And then Scott always brings up the point of have them work with your dog also.
Yeah, when I started, I did the demo dog thing like a lot of dog trainers do still today. Meaning, I'd get my dog out and I would do all kinds of different behaviors with my dog. And it started working against me because I felt like they would either say, well, I don't need that much control. I don't want my dog to look that good. I just need him to do, just not pulling the leash, you know? Or they'd say, I want my dog to look exactly like that. Well, my dog, it took me 3 years to get him to that point. They're coming in for a 2-week program. In 2 weeks, your dog isn't going to look like my dog. Plus, they have the genetic issue too. You know, the genetics plays a part in how animated your dog looks. That's why people that do dog sports like to get a very high drive dog that looks very animated, that loves toys, for example, that kind of stuff. So
that's a pain in the butt to live with.
Yeah, and they're not easy to live with. But all that being said, the same training with two different dogs with different genetics backgrounds, the dogs are going to look totally, or not totally different, but they're going to look different in the end, even though the training was identical. So what I started doing was, you know, I'd have my dog with me. I might just put my dog on a bed or in a down or something. But the first thing I would do is take their dog. Hey, let me work with your dog for a few moments and get a feel for what's going on with your dog. And that people found way more impressive because people only care about themselves. They really don't give a shit about you and your dog as far as I'm concerned. They want to know about their dog. What are you going to do for them? What are you going to do for their dog? So if you can take, and it was, you know, quite often they thought it was very impressive because some of these people had been to 2 or 3 trainers already and they said, oh, they were afraid the dog was untrainable. They're like, we can't do anything. We went to this person for 6 months. The dog still can't walk on a loose leash. And I would take the dog and have the dog walking on a loose leash in like 5 minutes. And they would just be beside themselves like, oh my God, I can't believe it. But the deal was then closed before I even got to the point of talking about what I had to offer because they could see that I could make progress, you know?
And there are many other trainers that didn't take the leash before. And it's surprising.
Especially with aggressive dogs too.
Yeah, and it's just surprising how many people will talk a lot and tell you a lot and ask you to show them a lot, but don't feel comfortable themselves taking the leash. So make sure that you're feeling like, okay, you have a good feel in your gut and in your heart and in your head about the whole situation before you move forward, because dog training is a process and it is kind of eye-opening experience, if that makes sense, because you do have to do some more introspection than you were thinking of doing. There are going to be some emotional triggers because when the dog causes stress in the family, that becomes a painful part of your life and everything else. So be thoughtful of it. We're not trying to overthink it here for you, but we've been in the field for decades and we know that, you know, there's a lot of people out there feeding a lot of people a lot of crap, and we don't want you to spend your money with someone that isn't going to be able to help you and your dog.
Yeah, one thing that's kind of strange about the dog training industry, and it, I guess it just started in the 60s when they started doing these group classes, is that it's one of the very few trades where the tradesperson shows up and then shows you how to do it. Can you imagine if a plumber came to your house and said, here's my tools. Okay, start snaking out. First, take the bolts off the bottom of the toilet, remove that, run the snake down there. That's it, a little deeper. Turn the machine on. It doesn't happen. The professional comes in and they do the work and then they leave. With a dog trainer, they come in and tell you what to do. And you don't have the experience, you don't have the timing, you don't have the technique, because that all takes time. So it's nice if you have a trainer that can come in, take your dog in front of you, and get it started, get it walking on a loose leash, you know? And then say, okay, come on up here. Now I'm going to show you how to do this, so that before you go home from that first class, whatever behavior you're working on, at least you're able to replicate it in the training area. And then, of course, you're going to go home and try and work on it, and it's going to be more difficult at home. But I've had so many people come in that say the last trainer never touched my dog. They just told me what to do, and then they blame me for not doing it enough and this, that, and the other thing, you know, which kind of sucks for people.
Yeah, and with that said, if you're a good dog trainer, not only do you have to be good with dogs, but you have to be good with people also. And
really? Come on.
You think that you're not, but you're better than you think. And
better now that I met you.
Yeah, that's true. I have helped a little
bit
on that front.
She softens them up.
I have helped a little bit on that front. However, it instills confidence in the owner when they see, wow, my dog is able to do this. Like, even if it's not with them at first, it gives them this vision of not only is it possible, but this is what it looks like. So be thoughtful about all these things. And we're going to have some more tips for you guys after the break.
Does your dog lack self-control? Are you looking for some answers? Would you like your dog to be calmer? Does your dog lack confidence? Canine Mind Shift. Enroll in a free course today. Simply go to caninemindshift.com. That's caninemindshift.com.
You want to do it.
Okay, this is ridiculous.
I think okay. I have your... Oh, no, this is mine.
Are we back?
Yeah, we're back. Are you ready to tell them some more gems?
Time just flies. Okay, I wanted to bring up this thing about guarantees. You know, I personally don't guarantee. I never guaranteed anything that I did with dogs. I thought it was really unethical and it made no sense, because whatever I can do with your dog, obviously, you come to me for training. And I'm not saying that I can't train the dog, but I have no control of that dog after it leaves me. It goes home with a bunch of kids that are jumping on its head or God knows what they're doing. And then the dog runs out the front door or bites a kid or this, that, or the other thing. So it doesn't make sense. Anyone that's putting, you know, that we guarantee our work and all that, it's really, in my mind, just a sales pitch. It's kind of a scammy thing. And I think really, if you look into it, it doesn't. The fine print, if you will, all it'll say is that if your dog isn't trained, you can come back. If the training is wearing off, you can come back at any time. I did that kind of stuff in the beginning too, but that also was unfair to the dog and unfair to me, because if I spend all this time training the dog and then the dog is good for 6 weeks and they're not doing a damn thing with the dog and all of a sudden it all wears off again. So they're like, oh, I got to come in for those free classes because the dog isn't performing well. And they come in, and then they come back again a year later, or 2 years later, or 5 years later. I mean, when does it end? And that being said, along with the guarantee, I would have an expiration on all my contracts with everybody. If you're paying for five private classes with me, it would have typically a 3-month or a 6-month expiration. If you don't come in once today, and then 3 months from now, come in again. And then 4 months later, come in again, because the dog's never going to get trained. The whole point is to start coming in on a regular basis, practicing at home on a regular basis, and getting some training into the dog in a reasonable time frame, not just stretching that stuff out forever and then bitching because they didn't get their fifth class 5 years later and the company is closing.
Yeah, and I mean, guarantees, it seems very salesy. And Scott would always use the line, like, especially when he was first meeting somebody or on the phone, it sounds like, you know, there's a lot of room for improvement. Or once he would work with a dog, like, you know, I think we could see a big shift in the dog here if we were able to work together. But guarantees, they're animals. Like, it just doesn't make sense. I used to tour around a lot with canine production companies and do fairs and theme parks and everything else. And there were tiger shows and crocodile shows and everything else. There was no guarantee what the animals were going to do. I mean, tigers did crazy stuff sometimes. They would go after the trainer and you know, it was a lot. Like that would be like a bonus. But there's no guarantee with animal behavior. So it just kind of seems silly to be saying that. And not only does it seem salesy, but it also shows some inexperience. So let's talk about the real deal here, what you're looking at when you're going to be talking about training your dog. So many people go to puppy classes, and that's great. There's no problem with puppy classes. Go wherever you want. If you have a local facility or if you want to go to Petco, whatever you want to do, that's fine. That is not training for your dog's life. Like, I can't tell you how frequently Scott would say, oh, have you done training? Oh yeah, we did a puppy class 6 years ago. Well, that's not training for your dog's life. The puppy class is mostly just socialization, getting your dog out in the world, maybe playing with some other puppies of its own size for a few minutes. It's not the foundation and then what's going to carry through your dog's life to be a well-behaved dog for the rest of its time.
Yeah. I mean, I always use the analogy, you know, kids, you know, they go to nursery school, kindergarten, and then 12 grades. And when they graduate from high school, everyone is in agreement that the kid doesn't know shit. That's kind of where we're at that point. Now they say, go 4 more years of college. And that's super weak. That's like, wow, you really wasted a lot of money with 4 years of college. You got to get a doctorate, you know, at this point. So with a dog, and granted, most dogs these days are smarter than the kids. But with a dog, it only makes sense that after you get these behaviors into the dog, which it doesn't take a long period of time to make that happen, but there's maintenance. And you should go back and jump into a class at least once a year. Go back and do some kind of brush up. And I think that's really, really stretching it to say once a year, go in and do a half a dozen classes or stay on top of it. Or if you're having a behavior in particular that was particularly troublesome, like you have a dog that didn't come when called, stay on top of that stuff. And even if it means going and paying a trainer, maybe you use the same trainer, and every 6 months you go in and do 2 or 3 classes with the person, just as a refresher, because people get busy. It's understandable. You know, they don't, when the dog is working well, it just drops way down the priority list. As soon as it's doing well, nobody cares about the dog because there's so many other things that are demanding your time. So I understand that you're not going to get out there, put a long line on your dog and practice come when the dog is coming already pretty well. People wait until it all falls apart, you know?
Yeah, and even if you're not going to go back to classes and train with someone specifically, go out into the real world. Like, leave your house. Can your dog walk down the street nicely just for kicks? You know, go to Home Depot. Can you bring your dog to Home Depot? You should be able to have real-world application of these things. And I was going to mention CGC classes. If you need the CGC stuff for homeowners insurance, fine. But if you're just doing it to get a certificate and you can't generalize those behaviors in your daily life, there's really not a lot of value to a CGC class.
It's just like a trick class. You know, the dog can do these behaviors in the facility where you trained it, but you can't do it in the parking lot off leash outside of the facility. And if you can't do it outside like that, then it has no value. You know, all you've done is accomplish getting a certificate for whatever reason you wanted that, you know?
Yeah, and if you're doing fun stuff, we're all about fun classes. We even have nose work classes and tricks classes and everything within our online spectrum for canine healing. Balance those out with some basic obedience. You need to have control of your dog in the world. This is what it's all about. This is why dog training is there. If you're driving in the car and your car breaks and AAA has to come and the tow truck guy has to come and all this stuff, like, you need to have control of your dog in various circumstances. So be conscious of those things and always be working towards a dog who can handle any situation, and make sure that you have control of any environment that you put your dog in. It's super important.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to touch base with a dog trainer every so often, because getting that critical eye, looking at what you're doing as a third party, really helps you a lot. Because you can be, when you're training or think you're training, you're so involved in what you're doing that you quite often don't see the weakness. And when I was training in dog sports, I always trained with a friend of mine, and he would critique me when I was working my dog, and I would critique him. And we did it to help each other. And it was so nice to have someone say, hey, you know, from this angle, this looks weak, or this is going on, or your hand is doing this every time. Because you don't, you know, we're creatures of habit. Dogs read body language. So you can be making your dog do some weird little thing and you don't understand why it's happening, but it's because you're not conscious of what you're doing with your own body, you know?
Yeah, and with that said, make sure that your dog trainer allows you to communicate in between classes and everything else. Like, you don't want to be texting them every day, hour upon hour, but we would be excited when someone would send us a video and say, hey, what's wrong with this? Why isn't it working well and everything else? Like, you want to make sure you can have some support, because that's where the problems normally happen, is at home. And if you just wait till the next class, there's sometimes a lot of opportunity and gems missed. So make sure there's kind of an open communication policy with the trainer that you pick also.
And I was going to say, I forgot, I don't know if we mentioned it already, but as far as methodology and personality, you know, you need to be working with a trainer that you're not intimidated by, that you can voice your concerns, your opinions, your feelings to them, and not feel as though they're going to explode or act, you know, unreasonable with you. You know, you just need someone that is professional, that is able to communicate well. And if you're not comfortable with the methodology, or if it doesn't seem like it's progressing in the first one or two classes, give it all a chance, you know, to work through it, to get to the other side of it. You know, if you committed to five classes, do all five classes. If it didn't go the way you wanted to, if your dog isn't working as well as you were hoping, then find somebody else that maybe approaches dog training from a different way. But don't give up on the dog. It's rare that there's a dog that's untrainable. In fact, I tell everybody, I mean, I used to think, you know, some of these dogs are not trainable. They're just too crazy. But really what I was telling myself was they weren't trainable within the time frame that I was allowing them, that the people paid me for. If it was going to be a two-week board and train program, there are some dogs out there that have such deep emotional baggage, some of these rescues, that in 2 weeks they have such anxiety, they have this or that, that they're not, you know, just getting them to relax, you know, is a big accomplishment. And it doesn't mean they're untrainable. But just like with some kids that can't, you know, go through the normal school system, they can still become productive adults, but they need to take a little bit longer to get there than the average kid, you know?
Yeah, just like with kids, some dogs learn at different rates. And then lastly, if you're going to do a board and train program, we're all for it, whatever floats your boat and works for you and your family, but go visit the facility. Like, it is a huge red flag when people say, oh, like, you know, can I see where the dog stays? And they say, oh, no, that's private or something else. I mean, we trained out of our house, our rental in Massachusetts, you know, when we first got together, and we would have people come to the house. If they wanted to come to the house, come to the house. It wasn't part of the situation, but there was nothing to hide. Like, if there's this big, oh, no, you can't see where the dog is, go somewhere that you can see where the dog is. I'm not saying they need 24-hour cameras on the dog so you can be looking in, but that to me is like a big holdup of like, why can't I just see where my dog is staying? Why should that rock the boat here with this whole transaction and this whole situation? So we're not trying to freak you out about dog trainers. Just do your research.
We love dog trainers.
we do, and we are dog trainers, and we enjoyed being dog trainers, but commit to spending, you know, a few hundred dollars to a few thousand dollars on your dog's training for the entirety of its life. Because really, a well-behaved dog has so many more options than a dog that is a freaking pain in the butt that you can't bring anywhere. So if you guys need us, you can email us at studio@thequirkydog.com. And next week, we are going to go over activities to do with your dog in the winter, because it's getting a little bit cold and snowy out there in most parts. And in the meantime, keep it quirky.
Get that musher's secret, guys.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts, guests, or callers of this program do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Studio 21 Podcast Cafe, the United Podcast Network, its partners or affiliates.